This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
New York made a powerful statement, not just for the people of New York, but the people all across this nation. We reached a new level of social justice.
He is, in fact, wants to impose one point of view on everybody, namely that there's only one sort of marriage and it's genderless. And if you don't accept it, then you're a bigot.
People of all faiths are welcome in this country. Our nation was founded on a principle of religious tolerance.
You see concern about Mormonism particularly strong among white evangelical Protestants. A little bit over a third, 34%, tell us they'd be less likely to back a candidate who was Mormon.
That faucet of forgiveness needs to be wide open because God's not stingy.
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers love Issues Etc.
The headline reads, Special Software Sheds Light on Who Really Wrote the Bible. Now, computers are capable of doing some remarkable things, and what the creators of this software and the researchers involved in the research are saying is that when applied to the text of the Old Testament, in particular the first five books of the Bible, that would be called the Pentateuch, the books of Moses, they've been able to discern more than one author, at least two authors. And this is, by the way, what liberal Bible scholarship has been asserting about the entire Old Testament and the New Testament for a long, long time. It cannot be from the pen of those who either claim authorship or have been claimed to be authors of these texts. It has to have come from many hands over many years. And the implication, of course, is there can be no divine origin to any of the books of the Old or New Testament. We'll examine this claim here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest for that conversation. After that, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway joins us from GetReligion.org. We'll talk about media coverage of several religion stories, including religious exemption for the new same-sex marriage law in the state of New York. Our call-in number live this Thursday afternoon, June the 30th, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology at Concordia University Chicago, author of several Bible commentaries, and a new book titled From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Nice to be back with you, Todd.
The researchers and the manufacturers of the software claim to have corroborated much of what liberal Bible scholarship has taken the last 200 years to determine. What exactly are they claiming, in particular, about the first five books of the Old Testament?
Well, for about 150 years or so now, liberal Bible scholars have claimed there are four different strands that make up the Pentateuch. And these four strands come from four different eras and at least four different authors. The latest of them is supposed to be the priestly author, and the article mentions this priestly author. And other four come from four earlier times. The priestly author apparently, according to these scholars, wrote after the Babylonian exile. The others wrote before the Babylonian exile.
Okay, so the theory is that, contrary to the historic and the traditional reading of the first five books of the Bible, it's of multiple authors, and its composition spans not just, say, the lifetime of Moses or shortly thereafter, as the traditional reading would indicate. Composition spans 1,000 years, perhaps.
Yeah, and the Pentateuch, instead of being kind of the foundation of the Old Testament, ends up being kind of the roof, because it's not completed until after the Babylonian exile. So it kind of turns everything on its head, really. And of course, this leads to all kinds of theories about, you know, why there was no Exodus, for instance, because of course all this was made up long after the fact, doubts about whether there really was a Moses, and even if there was, he probably didn't do the things that the Pentateuch says he did, and all kinds of theories like that.
All right, how are these authorship questions allegedly answered by liberal Bible scholarship? How do they arrive at these conclusions?
Well, part of it is thematic. So, for instance, the priestly authors are interested in things like ritual, and they are interested in genealogies, obviously, because you have to be able to prove your genealogy to be a priest, you know. They're interested in rather mundane things like that. They have a view of God who is very transcendent. He's over all things and separated from his creation, whereas the earlier authors, especially the first one, which they call J., was very much viewed God as very intimately associated with his creation, and he's a more personal God who's very close to you. So they claim that they can see these thematic elements and separate them that way. They also claim make some claims about vocabulary. So, for instance, the one author that they call D., who's mainly responsible for Deuteronomy, he supposedly has a certain vocabulary and certain words and phrases that he likes to use. So whenever they see those words and phrases, they say, aha, it must be the Deuteronomist, the D author.
So this is, would the term here be literary criticism?
It is kind of a literary criticism.
Source criticism?
Yeah, source criticism would be better, I think. Literary criticism, we don't want to give the literary critics a bad name. I mean, you can do literary criticism on Shakespeare. There's nothing wrong with it. But this idea that we can somehow get behind the text and figure out sources that have been long obscured by a final editor who wove these sources together, That's really what this is all about.
Okay, so I'm trying to get the parameters of the theory here from the liberal Bible scholars. They have at least four authors, perhaps four groups of authors, maybe a better way of describing it. Each has their own way of saying things, their own theological concerns, perhaps even their own theology at work, their own view of God. They're telling the story, and at some point, a editor or a group of editors kind of synthesize all this together in what appears to be a coherent and continuous narrative.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Only the editorial activity doesn't happen just at the end point. They think some of these strands were brought together earlier and then more strands were added by another editor. And you know, so there might be several editorial processes going on over time to bring these four strands together.
Does this theory, I mean, it's usually called Four Source or JEDP for the various authors, the Yahwehist, the Elohist,
Deuteronomist,
and then the priestly author.
Right.
Does this theory hold any water whatsoever?
Well, I don't really think so. When you look at it very closely, you realize that it is a child of its times. It grew up when there was a theory of history that was very popular by the German philosopher Hegel. And it is really a Hegelian philosophy of history gone wild. And historians nowadays, although this was very popular in the mid to late 19th century, historians nowadays realize that history doesn't work exactly the way Hegel said it did. And so it's really based on an outmoded theory of history. Plus, it's come under attack even by critical liberal scholars, so that you have scholars in the United States that are still clinging to this theory, but most European scholars have discounted this theory, not that they accept that Moses wrote the Pentateuch, mind you, but they've discounted this theory for about 30 years now and have moved on and tried to create other theories, although I don't know that there's a European consensus. So really you have, you know, the Americans who are kind of clinging to what ironically was a European, a German theory, and the Germans in particular and other Europeans have moved on to other things.
With only about 30 seconds here, how do we deal with the different vocabulary, the different apparent concerns or different ways of telling the story that we might find, even with the limited space of the first five books of the Bible?
Well, I think you have to understand that Moses, at least for Genesis, had to have sources. He had to rely on sources. He didn't live through everything that's in the book of Genesis. So for the book of Genesis, some of these different strands that we might be talking about, some of the differences in the stories may actually come from the fact that he had to rely on getting that information somewhere else, because that all happened before his lifetime. Once we get into the books beyond that, Exodus through Deuteronomy, I think we have to realize that they're written over a period of probably 40 years, that they concern a number of different topics, and a good author, a skillful author, may not write the same way about different topics. So, you know, you have narrative history, you have laws, you have civil law and religious law in there. You have sermons, as in the case of Deuteronomy, which is largely sermonic material from Moses. So you have a number of different styles, and a good author can write in various styles, and he will vary his vocabulary. Plus, authors tend to change over time anyway. You know, reading something from, say, the young Luther is not the same as reading something from the old Luther, so it might be the same for Moses over 40 years.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. We're talking about a software that's being used to determine, or allegedly determine, biblical scholarship and biblical authorship. We'll be right back.
You'll find 130 Bible stories for young children in the Story Bible. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. The Story Bible contains high-quality, realistic art, discussion questions, and prayers. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Story Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House at 1-800-325-3040. Christ-centered, cross-focused, the Story Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota, Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri, and Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. In about 10 minutes, Molly Ziegler Hemingway will join us, do a little roundup of some religion coverage in the media. In the meantime, Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest, professor of theology at Concordia University Chicago and author of several Bible commentaries and a new book titled From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Some might say, Dr. Steinman, look, Moses doesn't sign his name to the documents. Granted, it might appear that Moses is the author of all of this. Where do we get a Mosaic authorship for the first five books of the Bible?
Well, very clearly already in the Old Testament, this is called the Law of Moses or the Teachings of Moses or things like that. This is seen very clearly in books like Ezra and Nehemiah, first of all, that attributed to Moses. But also there are hints of this in the Book of Kings. And so, you know, very ancient times this was accepted as from Moses. Jesus confirms this in the Gospels, as do the apostles in their writings. And so we have elsewhere in Scripture that says these come from Moses. He, of course, is the logical person to write these. Much of it is about his life or events during his life, certainly everything from Exodus on through Deuteronomy. There's just been a long tradition of this, almost as far back as we can go in the Scriptures, to say that Moses wrote this.
The pre-Moses stuff, the stuff that predates Moses' own lifetime. We got two bookends we got to deal with, and that would be the pre-Moses stuff. You said earlier that he is probably working from other sources that already exist, written or oral, whatever they may be. Does that preclude divine inspiration? Him receiving, say, for instance, knowledge of the creation account, which probably no one wrote down, unless it might have been Adam himself?
Yeah, no, it doesn't preclude divine inspiration. I would assume that, first of all, that whether, I don't know how many sources Moses had, but he somehow had to stitch them together. Was inspired to that. And also, his choice of sources would be inspired. I mean, God would guide him as to what to include and what not to include. And, you know, if we're going to say that we're going to exclude from the Bible anything that had a source, then, of course, we probably got to get rid of two of the Gospels that aren't written by apostles and probably didn't hear everything that Jesus said. Mark certainly was an apostle, for instance. We'd have to get rid of the Book of Kings and much of the Book of Chronicles, maybe all the Book of Chronicles, which actually mention having sources, you know, and on and on and on. So the fact that Moses might have used sources is not out of the ordinary for the Bible, but it's the divine inspiration is that God guided these authors in their choice of sources so that they would be accurate, and also in their use and stitching together these sources to make the books that we now have.
The other bookend that needs to be dealt with, and it's not nearly as difficult, and that is the end of Deuteronomy seems quite obviously to have come from someone else's pen because it records Moses' death. Moses isn't writing after he dies. I guess he could have written it before he died, but it also is rather, what shall we say, it's a little bit of a hagiography of Moses himself.
Yeah, and it kind of ends with saying a prophet like Moses has not arisen in Israel to this day, or some words to that effect, which makes it sound like it's sometime after the event, probably a little bit of a considerable time. And so I think we can probably conclude that someone, some prophet, was inspired to write probably that last chapter, that last little bit of Deuteronomy and appended to Deuteronomy sometime after Moses. And, you know, Christians have recognized this for centuries, long before the rise of these liberal critical theories about the Bible. It was recognized that most likely Moses didn't write that, kind of prophetically revealed about what it would be like with his death, but that somebody who knew about Moses' death recorded this on the end of the Pentateuch. It's interesting that we actually have a notice in the book of Joshua, that Joshua wrote some things on the book of the law. Now, whether that means that Joshua wrote this, we can't say, but already there was some activity of Joshua in his day concerning writing things on the book of the law.
So would you take it that when we begin to hear references to the book of the law, in the first five books or in Joshua and subsequent books, we get them again with Ezra and Nehemiah, with whom you are very familiar. Would you suggest that when we hear those references, we are really talking probably about these source originals or copies from Moses himself?
Yeah, we're talking about those books substantially as we have them. And the reason we can say that is because oftentimes they quote or allude to these in later books of the Bible. The Psalms certainly do this and take phraseology right out of these books. The prophets do this. Ezra, Nehemiah, especially a long section of Nehemiah does this. And we can, you know, actually tell what parts of the Pentateuch they're referring to because they match the language so well. So it would seem to me that what they are quoting is pretty much like what we have now. Now, of course, there could have always been a copyist error here or there, but they're substantially the same thing. There's a long, long manuscript tradition that we can point to say, no, this is pretty much what Moses wrote, and it's pretty much what the Old Testament people had from all indications.
Doesn't a Mosaic authorship also answer a problem that is usually, I guess, interpolated by liberal Bible scholars, and that is what seems to be the author's intimate knowledge of details, names, place names, names of people, numbers, all of these things that if Moses were writing these things either at or near the time of the actual events, he would know.
Yeah, unless you're going to say this was a really skilled forger. And in many cases, these details, oftentimes when we learn a little bit more from extra-biblical sources, pan out, and they're pretty good. So, you know, this would have to be a really, really skilled forger to kind of do this. And, you know, we have documents from the ancient world where people tried to make up details, and they invariably got them wrong because they didn't know. But it's interesting that in a number of cases, we have details, and they seem to pan out. They seem to match what we know from archaeology and historic finds and things like this. For a forger to do that, he would have to be of such a great skill that he would have had to been Moses' brother or something, Aaron or somebody like that, to forge it in Moses' name.
The story that I read that kicked off our conversation says several times that a single author of the Pentateuch, these first five books of the Bible, is a matter of faith. Is it entirely a matter of faith, Dr. Steinman, from a scholarly viewpoint?
No, I don't think it is entirely a matter of faith. I think there's a tremendous consistency. I think there are things you can point to that say that, at very least, say that these books and the portions that scholars say that are later are demonstratively earlier. You mentioned at the top my new book on chronology, and I make the point in there that we can now talk about figure out when the dates of the sabbatical and jubilee years were in the Old Testament. And the indication is they go all the way back, to the time of the entry into the land. Well, if the priestly source supposedly wasn't written till the Babylonian captivity, and it was, you know, these sabbatical years were supposedly invented by the priestly source, then how come we can figure out sabbatical years well before the Babylonian captivity? It would seem to me that indicates that this is a very ancient legislation, not as recent as the Babylonian captivity, as the critics have been saying for over 100 years now.
Since you mentioned it, with about 30 seconds here, tell us about your new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. About 30 seconds, Dr. Steinman.
Yeah, well, I take all the information in the Bible about when things happen, and I set out chapter by chapter from the time of Abraham through the death of Peter and Paul, what happened when and how we can know that, how we can use the Bible plus sources outside the Bible to determine the year, oftentimes the month, sometimes even the exact day when things happened. We can know the day of Jesus' crucifixion, for instance. We can know the year of Paul's missionary journeys, and we can estimate many of the events in between. And so this book gives you kind of section by section how we can go through the Bible and know these dates. And from recent research, research of the past 100 years, how we can be very accurate about many of these dates.
Folks, you can purchase this new book from our guest, Dr. Andrew Steinman, From Abraham to Paul, by calling Concordia Publishing House, their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy under the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Look for From Abraham to Paul by Dr. Andrew Steinman. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology at Concordia University Chicago. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Nice to be back with you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about media coverage or the lack thereof on certain stories related to religion. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
The sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Issues Etc. regular guests Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the Premier Worship Conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
EU doctors opt out of abortions.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, also known as PACE, has ruled to allow European doctors the right of conscientious objection when it comes to abortions. PACE adopted the resolution instead of an earlier one that objected what it called unregulated use of the right to conscientious objection. The completed resolution prohibits anyone from being coerced, held liable, or discriminated into performing an abortion for any reason. The liberal slant of most PACE rulings was cause for concern among European pro-lifers, but in this case, at least pro-life doctors will be protected.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.